on explorations in quantum gravity. So we want to quantize 3D gravity, and to do that we're using the Dirac program, which has these steps. So first we're selecting a set of basis functions and constructing the kinematical Hilbert space. The next step would be the canonical quantization of this kinematical Hilbert space, which includes quantizing our constraints, our Gaussian flatness constraints. Then we want to find solutions which are annihilated by these constraints, and this solution space equipped with an inner product is going to form our physical Hilbert space. And then we just want to check that our physical Hilbert space allows for a representation of our Dirac observables. And where are we? There. And after about two lectures or so of hard work, we are just about done with step one. So good progress. All right, that's the end of the fun, alas. So our first step, we want to select some good basis variables, and our starting points are the canonical pair of the connection and the densitized triad. And these guys have the Poisson bracket given here, with the other Poisson brackets disappearing. But the thing is, we don't want these delta functions, because when we go to quantize things, we're gonna get operator value distributions, which are kind of gross. And then the other thing we don't really like about these guys is that the connection has this transformation property under gauge transformations, which isn't so nice. The second term, we don't really want it. So, you know, do we really want to promote these guys to operators? No, we don't. So solution, we want to smear the functions in such a way that the resultant Poisson brackets don't include delta functions or integration. I've got some, because integration would require us to introduce the metric, and you know that's what we're trying to avoid in the first place. So we're going to smear the basic configuration variables over a k-dimensional hypersurface, which here we're going to do it over a curve. And then the conjugated variables over a d minus k dimensional hypersurface, where d is the number of spatial dimensions. So for us, that's 2, 2 minus 1, 1. So we'll also be smearing those guys over curves. And this is going to result in new functions, which are functionals of the connection and the densitized triad. And then these guys should have Poisson brackets that form a closed algebra, and that transform nicely under gauge transformations. So what is the flux? Wait, did I just skip one? Oh, no, I didn't. I was looking at the wrong thing. So when we do the thing that I just described on the slide prior, our configuration variables are going to give us, once we smear them, what are called holonomies. And these guys kind of describe finite parallel transport along a curve, so they're telling us some things about curvature. In terms of properties, they're SU2 valued objects. You know, you can get an expression explicitly for it by the path ordered exponential of the negative integral over the connection over the curve, or here edge, because we're going to be talking about graphs. It's independent of the parameterization. They have this nice composition property where the multiplication there is a SU2 multiplication. Then you've got a property about the inverse. So that's all like two lectures ago. And then yesterday we introduced the conjugate variables, the fluxes. So what is this flux thing? So the holonomies provide half of our basic set of new phase space functions. The other set, other half come from smearing the conjugate variable, the densitized triad, over another curve. We're going to take the second curve to intersect the other curve transverse at one point, such that the tangent vectors here at the point of the intersection are positively oriented. And then for this geometric flux sitting at gamma naught, this is explicitly the expression for it. And then delving into what all this is, the first term, the holonomy there, it defines a parallel transport from a point, point on the gamma star curve to the beginning of the intersection, gamma naught, you know, and we're using the point gamma, the beginning point of gamma rather than the beginning or some point on gamma star such that the transformation behavior of our two conjugate variables are, you know, nicely related. And then why are these holonomies inserted in the definition of the flux? That's just because we want to ensure that under internal rotations, we have this nice transformation property. Yeah, so the flux is a Lie algebra-valued object, so how do we extract its components? Well, we can take advantage of the fact that the trace of two SU2 generators is we're normalizing it like this. So if we want to get the components of these guys, well, we can just take the trace of this E, where this E is the contraction there. It's an SU2-valued object. With one of the SU2 generators, we take the trace of that, and you can show explicitly after a couple lines that this is the expression you get, where we've introduced this rotation matrix representing, and that just comes from the fact that we have an equivalence between the adjoint rep of SU2 and the vector rep of SO3 on its Lie algebra. That's why we can get away with introducing that guy. And then now that we have the components, we want to check that our new good variables, the flux and the holonomies, form a closed algebra. And we found last time that the Poisson brackets for the matrix components of the holonomies, that Poisson bracket vanished because the holonomies were functionals of the connection only. The Poisson bracket between two of the fluxes gave that. And to do that, we just kind of, you know, cheated a bit and used the Jacobi identity. And then the last guy, the mixed one, you would have to, if you wanted to compute it explicitly, which, yeah. So this algebra is closed. It coincides with the Poisson algebra functions on the cotangent space of SU2. So our first step, I say first because we've had a lot of first steps in quantizing 3D gravity, but we're going to quantize the geometry of an edge of a graph, which I think is probably what we're doing today. Maybe. I don't know. But yeah.
Okay, very good. Thanks, Aurora. So now we are going to indeed go to the at least definition of the kinematical Hilbert space for today. And next week, I don't think we will have time to do the constraint today, but. So what we have seen is that a truncature of the theory is going to be given on a graph. And even if we just focus on one edge of a graph for the moment, okay. So what are the variables that we have? As Aurora remind us, is going to be an holonomy, which is a SU2 group element, and a flux variable. And so now we are going to look at the kinematical Hilbert space. If we just focus one single edge of a graph. So this is our configuration variable. Okay, so our space of function now is going to be of course squared integrable function over on SU2. And so now what do we want to do to define the kinematical Hilbert space? So to get, we need to turn the variable into operators. On this space of function, okay, in the space of function over SU2. And then we need to introduce the inner product. And once we will have the inner product, we want to get an orthonormal basis for this kinematical Hilbert space. Okay, so these are the steps we're going to do now. And okay, so the first step is we want to quantize function of the holonomies, okay? And we know that, so the idea when we quantize our variable is that we want to have this correspondence, okay? So here we know that the matrix element of SU2 of the holonomy, okay, is equal to zero. So then we want, of course, when we're going to deal with operator, so when we want, so this means that this is a function, okay, can be seen as a function of the holonomy because it's a matrix element of the holonomy. So this means that we want now to quantize function of the holonomy in such a way that we get something which is commuting. Okay. So this means that at the level of the Poisson, of the commutator now, we want to have something commuting. And the easiest thing, so what we want to do, so let's write it explicitly. We want to quantize function of the holonomies. Okay, a function on the holonomy can be decompose on the matrix element of this holonomy usually. And so we're going to define, since we want a commuting operator, we're going to define the action as, of course, a multiplication. Okay? So the action of a function as, so acting by multiplication, but maybe here let me introduce something different. Another notation, a more abstract notation. So here we're interested in function from SU2, meaning that here if you have a matrix group element, okay, but like in quantum mechanics, you can work with a wave function or you can work with a state vector directly, okay? Here we can define the state vector in the holonomy representation. So we're going to just, in the holonomy representation, the equivalent of the state vector. So it's easier to use this more abstract notation. We have that, we can denote this like this. Okay, and so now I'm going to define the action, so as an operator acting on this state, vector state here, is going to act by multiplication, saying that we get. So this means that here we are defining the function of the holonomy R as a multiplicative operator. And obviously, this multiplication operator here commutes. And then okay, so now what about fluxes? Our starting point here to get an idea of what we're going to get is to start again from the Poisson bracket, okay, to get an intuition. Because really, each time, what is the idea is that we start with the Poisson bracket, we want this correspondence, where here now we are going to deal with operators, okay? So here, as an operator, the function of the holonomy are multiplicative. Are commuting. So now let's see here. So this now is a conjugated variable. And if you remember, the parameter is particular. What you have seen in quantum mechanics, usually indeed, in the parameterized particle, we also quantized the configuration variable as a multiplicative operator. And the conjugated variable was quantized as a derivative operator. So this is what you're supposed to be expecting here. It's going to be a derivative operator. But so let's use this relation here that Aurora remind us. So here, what is the Poisson bracket between these variables? We get, so now it's more E. Let's use maybe E for the edge. J, and then these are the component M, N.
Should that function be inside the state? I understand. On the right-hand side, why you put F in the bracket would.
So what is the multiplication? So
it just be that it's F without the operator sign.
Yeah, and then you're going to, so if you want to go back to this kind of function, then you're going to apply H of E, okay? And this is going just to give you the product of. Yeah.
I don't understand. Phi of E and H of E are two states? What's the difference between them two?
Yeah, it's just that here you look at it as looking at the action of this function or as an operator on a given state, and this defines. But you can also, since it's a function of h of e, you could.
Not f.
Sorry.
Psi.
Right. Okay. So what is your question? I didn't get it. Sorry.
What is the bra h of e and the bra phi of e? Psi.
Okay. So here it's like. So in quantum mechanics, when you have your wave function, okay, you know that you can represent it in the
position.
Yeah, where you're going to use, and this is now you just can work with this quantum state here. Okay, so here I'm just saying we're going to work in the holonomy representation. So here, really, what is the H is really the equivalent of this X here, and so most of the time you can just work with this abstract quantum state, which is really the quantum state, and forget about the fact that it can be evaluated or represented. Here, it's just you choose a representation, so it's represented on this group element here. Okay. And maybe what is a bit different from what, for example, we have seen with Q. Okay, so what? When we were with the parameterized particle, okay, I was, in fact, more correctly, instead of writing really that the action of Q on a vector Q like this would be Q times Q. Okay, this is not, it's a bit, it's not so well written. What you really want is that it's a function. What you really have is that any function of Q as an operator is going to But the point is that why here what is very simple is it's one dimensional, okay? Whereas here this element is a matrix. Okay. So and what you have here is really that so the Poisson bracket of matrix element of this. Okay. So what does it mean? This means that here, of course, you could replace this by any function on because any function you can as a you can define on a basis as you can decompose as a, on a basis which can be given by the matrix element of your Okay, so here it's like a bit the matrix, the basis for the representation of a function defined on the group SU2. Okay, so really what you have is this. So now what I want is that I want to quantize any function of the holonomy, okay, that has I have as operator it's that. So what I'm just telling you is that this is going to act as a multiplication. And since here I'm forgetting about the fact that it's evaluated on a given H, okay, what does it mean otherwise if I, because what you're asking is why I don't write this, no? Yeah. But this is a function, here it's like a function, if it's not evaluated outside like this, it doesn't really mean anything, okay? So, whereas here what I really mean is that this is the equivalent of that, where I forgot that it's evaluated on a given X, or I forgot that it's evaluated on a given H, okay? Yeah.
Maybe it would be illustrative to say what would happen if I sandwich that state with the state H.
Yeah. So if now we write we just get that it's a multiplication of our function, which are number, so this is commuting, okay?
F is a number.
F of HE, so it's all of that are function defined on SU2, but it's a function, so when it's evaluated on a group element, it's just a complex number, okay?
Also F?
Yeah, F is also a function of the holonomy, so it's, because it's really what you want to, here, this is just written for some basis element. So if you generalize this to any function of f, it's what you want. So here, when you want to quantize, what you really want to quantize is function of the holonomy. And of course, if you know how to quantize function of the holonomy, you know you will know how to quantize matrix element. So this is how you define the action as a multiplicative operator. And in this kind of abstract notation, this what does it mean, okay? And here you see that this product is commutative. Okay, very good. So this was for the first part. So now we need to deal with the flux. And the idea is to try to get an idea if this can be, this action can be written as an operator, okay? And indeed this can be, and we have in mind that most of the time in quantum mechanics, when you have the configuration variable is quantized as a multiplicative operator, then this is the conjugated variable is going to be quantized as a derivative. Okay, and so let's check that this can be the case. You can rewrite this object as the derivative of with respect to a parameter t. Sorry, I think something wrong in my lecture notes here. I did a mistake here, so I need to figure out what is my mistake now. I guess it's just by multiplication of this. When then you're going to evaluate when t is equal to zero, and this by definition is the left invariant derivative operator acting on, and of course this is going to be a matrix, so you want just to take the component here. So this result, so this is the definition of the left invariant derivative. So what does it mean that it's left invariant derivative? This means that you can, it's commute with the multiplication k of the argument of the group here on the left hand side, okay, from the left. So indeed, you see that if you multiply it on the left by a group element here, it's not going to, it's commuting.
The index j doesn't should not appear at some point.
Sorry?
The index j, it's on the right, there is no index j.
Yeah, it's because then, so you need to, what is this notation I use here? You need to specify by which group. So how do you, yeah, instead of E here, I should write exponential of T. Yeah, sorry for the confusion. Okay, so this is better. Thanks. So this suggests us that we're going to quantize this flux variable as which can also be written in terms of the right action on the group. So I'm going to define this in the moment, where here you take then t equal to 0. So this is also an operator. So what is that? Here I'm using the right action. On the group by, so here h is equal to tj, okay, and the right action is defined. So why is it interesting? It's just that the right action is one of the representation of the group itself, because if you look at the way when you multiplied two group elements, you're going to, it's going to reproduce the group multiplication. It's just defined by the function f evaluated in, so it's the right action. So this means that you multiply g on the right by h. Okay. So this is exactly what, how you can define the left invariant derivative. So of course, yeah, the left invariant derivative is defined in terms of the right action of the group. But yeah, it's a way, it's a convention. Sorry?
Why do you put a bar on the h bar?
Okay. Yeah, because we have so many h, so it's
not h bar.
Sorry? Yeah, it's a h bar here. Okay, because the relation we have here, you remember, it's okay. So this is how we as an operator. So now we did the first step here. Okay, we define so the kinematical Hilbert space. So we know that we wanted it's going to be defined as L2 of SU2, and the step we just did was to define operator acting on this space of function, okay? So the function of the holonomies are going to act as multiplicative operator, and the flux variable is going to act as a derivative. And more precisely, here it's a left invariant derivative, okay? We need to, since you're reworking with group, we also have, so we have to specify, since things are not commuting, you have to specify which one you're using, okay? Okay, so now we are, so this is done. So now we are here, define the inner product. So for this, we need to introduce a measure on the space of SU2 function, okay? And this is, so to define the inner product, here we need a measure. And we are going to use, so for any compact Lie group, we have the R measure. So I don't know if you're from, have you, do you know what is the R measure? Yes. Okay, so just in general, what is how it is defined, the armature is, so it's defined for any compact group, any compact Lie group, and it can be defined uniquely, specified uniquely by the fact that it's going to be left and right invariant, and if you choose a normalization, okay, specify uniquely. So from the requirement, that it is, so left and right, it's invariant under left and right translation. So invariant, sorry, under left and right translation. So what does it mean? This means that if you have a measure on EG, then it's the same. You can multiply on the left, or you can translate on the right, and it's the same. It's invariant, okay? And if you want uniquely specified, you need to add that you want that this is normalized. And so we're going to ask that the integration over SU2 DJ also, here you can. The identity is just one, okay? And of course, so I'm not going to give an explicit form expression here, but you can, depending on how you define, you want to parameterize your group element in terms of angles, of course you can write this in terms of some angles, okay? But we are not going to use it explicitly here, so the only thing you know need to know is this. And okay, so this gives us, since we have a measure, okay, we can define now, we have an inner product, which is just if I have two functions defined on SU2, they're just going to be defined in terms of using the armor. Okay, great. So this is second step. Here we have the inner product. So once we have an inner product, we can now look at the Norton normal basis. Okay. And I don't know if you know. So now is the next step. How to get Norton normal basis. So here we have a theorem, which is nice. So I don't know if you're familiar with the Peter Weil theorem.
No.
No? Felipe, you said no?
I don't remember.
Okay, no worry. Well, I just recorded, but I won't tell anyone. Okay, so, what is the Peter Weil theorem? The Peter Weil theorem states that, in fact, it gives you an Norton normal basis for the space of squared integrable function over SU2 defined with the R measure. So here, it's when we take the R measure. And what he states that an Norton is given by, so we need to normalize in such a, the matrix element of the irreducible representation of SU2. Representation of SU2. So do you remember Our irreducible representation of SU2 is label.
With J's.
Okay. Where J is?
I have integral.
Okay, great. Perfect. And so indeed, so here we have J alpha integral, and what we're going to define as an orthonormal basis. So we can also here introduce this. So let me write it and then I'm going to explain. Okay, so these are my matrix element for a given irreducible representation J. Okay, so M and N are my magnetic number. So it's going from minus J to plus J. J here is an alpha integral. And again, so this is in the holonomy representation. And I can work directly with vector state vector here, GMN. And here, so this normalization factor is the dimension of your representation J. Okay, so do you know what is the dimension of the representation J?
2J plus 1.
Yeah, very good. I just said that magnetic number, we're going to minus J plus 2 plus J. So if you count the number, you get 2J plus 1 with the 0. Okay, very good. If it's...
So what is the ON basis in this statement?
Orthonormal basis.
So orthonormal basis?
What is the ON basis?
Okay. So... the orthonormal bases are going to be here given by this vector, but they are related to this vector. So let me write it explicitly. What does it mean? Okay, because it's going to become clear what I want to say here. So why is that an orthonormal basis? So let's check that indeed. If I now use my inner product for this matrix element, what do I get? Okay. So here, if I look at Mn of G. So this is my first function. And with now G prime, M prime, N prime, G, G, G. Okay, so I'm just using the inner product I just defined before. And this is given by 1 over DG, and then delta J, J prime, delta M, M prime, delta N. N prime. So you see that if you want to have that it's normalized, you need to indeed introduce this normalization here. But this is what this means, that it's an orthonormal basis in this case. And it's a complete basis. So indeed, you can expand the identity on this space of function as a sum over using this vector here. So this is a complete basis. So here, if you sum over all j, then m is going to be minus j, j, n is going to be minus j, j. Then you get the resolution of the identity using. So here, it's the identity for the space of integrable, square integrable function over SU2. With this R measure. Okay, so we are going to work with the
capital like D, J, M, N, like the elements of the like Wigner G matrices.
Sorry?
Are they related to the Wigner G matrices?
Yeah, it's the Wigner. Yeah, they are the what you call the Wigner matrices. Yeah. Very good.
Why do you have a label N?
Sorry?
Why do you have a label N?
Here?
In general, why is it not just J, M? Why is it J, M, N?
So this is a... So for a given J, okay,
yeah.
I'm writing... So this is a matrix... But I'm looking at the matrix element. OK? So I need, it's like, I don't know. So this is going, depending on the, So depending on J, this is going to be a matrix of size 2J plus 1 times 2J plus 1. Okay, and these are the indices of my matrix element. So it's a matrix element. So for a matrix, I don't know how to. You need to.
It's a matrix. I'm just not sure what it's describing, because I'm just used to having a state that's specified with a J, and then there's an M in between that can go from minus J to J. I don't know why we have.
So you mean? Yeah. So it could be.
Vector, I guess.
Okay. So here, how you relate that with what you know, maybe, is that if you want to use the basis you're used to in, then. Okay, because you define a matrix element. It's just that now, so this is my basis.
Yeah.
And so instead of working like this, I'm just using again. So this is my basis. So as here I said, I have a wave function, okay, that I represent on the x variable. Now it's, so these are now my equivalent of my wave function. It's the basis for my SU2 function. Any SU2 function can be decomposed on this matrix element. And for a given representation J. And so it's just, instead of using this just vector, I'm saying now that my vector state, because so I really want to keep all the information that I have here. So this is just a vector, abstractly, is my vector state. And this just means that here it's evaluated, it's written in the holonomy representation. Okay. So it's not the same vector here, but it's because it's what we need. So these are the label we need to work with, okay? If we want to have all the information.
Identical to what's underneath.
So this is the same thing as this with here's the normalization, because this is what I'm going to consider as my normalized orthonormal basis, okay? Yeah?
Would you define the inner product with integral of the Hilbert matrix?
Here?
Like, if you had to prove that it's an inner product and prove the positivity requirement of the inner product,
yeah,
how do you deal with the Haar measure in that sense? Like, how do you perform the integral?
So if you want
to prove that it's
so you have so you have different options depending on at which level you are, I guess. So depending, so if you know already the Peter Weiss theorem, all these matrices can be written in terms of decompose on this basis, and then you have many identity, so you can really simplify it. So you have several identity for when you have some product of this Wigner matrices here in terms of DJ, so you don't even have to write this explicitly. Then if you want to do the computation explicitly, another way to do that, it would be to choose an explicit representation of G, your group SU2, okay? And so usually it's going to be written in terms of angles and anything, and then you can write this explicitly in terms of angles and really perform step by step your
representation.
Yeah, so it's just how you choose to represent this. So either you already know that you can decompose and you use all you know about Wigner matrices and the well-known identity that you have, or if you want to really start from the beginning, you just choose a way to explicitly write your group element, and then you can write also explicitly in terms of angles and everything because this is like a measure on the two sphere, okay? Here, so you can write, it's well known how to write it explicitly. Okay, good. So today we finished step one that has been starting for a while. So I don't know who is going to do the next presentation, but he's going to be able to talk about steps two. So this is amazing. So, oh no, in fact, not. Not yet, sorry. Because we did step one just for one edge, and now we need to go for the graph. So, and what I want to do first, because it's better if you have this result for the tutorial this afternoon. So this tutorial this afternoon is a tutorial on loop quantum cosmology. So it's going to be not so much related to what you have seen, because first it's going to be in 4D, then it's going to be for a very symmetrical space-time. But the idea of loop quantum cosmology is that you start from this very symmetric space-time already. So the radius, you get the radius space-space, and on that you use the main idea from loop quantum gravity, which are that you want to work with holonomies and fluxes. So this is going to be still present. But another important ingredient for loop quantum cosmology is that you have an area gap. So this means, and this comes from the fact that the area operator is quantized, okay? So of course, in 3D, we are not going to deal with the area operator, but we're going to deal with the length operator. And I just want to build it now and to show you that indeed it's quantized. And what does it mean? Because these are, in fact, the ingredients that you need to go them to loop quantum cosmology. Even if you will see it's still quite different, but it's really the main lesson that you're going to remember from loop quantum gravity that you're going to export to this very symmetric space-time. Okay, so before going to the end of step one, which will be to go to the Hilbert space associated to a complete graph, I'm going to stay on one given edge and define what is the length operator for that, okay? And maybe as a first step, so the length operator is going to be defined in terms of the flux operator. So first, what I'm going to look at is what is going to be the action of the flux operator on this basis here, okay? So now my basis state are given by the sum of, and I'm going to, the aim now is going to define the length operator. But for this, so where do I start? Do I start here or maybe not? Yeah, so let's maybe motivate what is going to be the length operator. Okay, so you know that the length of a curve, so I'm going to look, so now I'm on one edge E, where it's the holonomy, and I can use, I'm going to compute the length of the dual length, the dual edge, okay? So if here this is E, then this is going to be, and I can compute. So just to give you an idea why we did this formula, so it's not very, I'm not doing all the steps, okay? I'm just trying to give you a kind of motivation on why it's that. So that I'm going to call gamma here because it's going to be easier for the notation. So I'm using the spatial metric combined with the tangent vector here. And you know that the spatial metric can be written in terms of the triad or the cotriad. And so you see that instead of here having that, if I'm looking now at the length squared operator, you're going to see that you get an idea that this is going to be a sum over all the fluxes, okay? And so here, the idea is that this integral can be kind of approximate with kind of a Riemann sum, could be seen as a Riemann sum approximation, but again, these are very some heuristic argument. I'm not proving anything here. And so instead of an integral, I'm going to get a sum. And then the idea is really that, so at each point here, I'm going to have a small e, okay? So I'm integrating that over. So at the end, we can replace that with a sum. But so really, this is just to give a kind of heuristic definition, because so the way we define the length squared as an operator, so this is the definition, is, and we want to look at this action on the state vector of our theory, is going to be the sum over k. So this is the definition of my, so it's the length squared operator. So the first step is to understand what is the action of E on this state vector. Okay. So if you remember, E is given by, so we're going to compute that. And using the right action on the group by the exponential of t acting so this is what we want to compute. And first I'm going to look at what is the right action of the group on this kind of vector, okay? And so let's first look at the right action of any group element on
definition of Riemann sum. You have a sum over n. What's n and what's big n?
So here it would be like if my curve would be chopped into very small pieces, okay? Uh-huh. And you sum over all the.
So where does this index appear in the?
Yeah, so here it will be, yeah, so more En and En, because it will be for each.
Would depend on how.
Yeah, okay. Like, and then of course, usually you take this this limit. So here it will be for each, if you subdivide your curve and you look at very small length here, okay, you can approximate like this. And so here indeed it will be more the triad or the densitized triad associated with a small part of your hedge. Thanks. So what is that? So by definition of the right action, this is going to be acting on a function. So this can be really seen as a function of g. So I'm acting on the right with h. And now I can use that this is a matrix element, so of a product of matrices, which can be decomposed as the product of two matrix elements, Pn, using the Wigner matrices. And now I'm just using the definition I have here for the G part. And so what I get here is that this is E. The sum over so of course P is summed here, so I don't need to write this explicitly. So this is 1 over square root of dg and maybe to make things more clear, I'm going to add explicitly that we are summing over P here. And so here I'm left with Pn of h. And so by definition, this also can be written, this is the right action acting on my state vector and then evaluated at g. So this is also so here, what we deduce from this is that the right action with a group element H on my state vector GMN can be written as GMP. Of course, here I forgot that there is also the normalization by definition here. So the normalization here is cancelled, and I just get that Pn of H. Okay. Where here I have a summation over P. Okay, good. So now we can write what is the action. And then I'm going to finish here, and then I can let you think about. Okay, so what is now the action of this operator? So it's going to be, I'm going to replace this by just what we just found here. So I get the EH bar. Then I get the sum over P of GM. Let's write it explicitly because then we get lost with all the indices. And I'm going to derive with respect to T of, so here I add some PN of now exponential of T K, I guess. That I'm going to evaluate at t equals 0. So what I get here, if I simplify this, is that just I get GMP. And then this is just the matrix representation of a Lie algebra group element in the group representation, so P N. Okay. This is the action of my operator on my vector space. And so now if I look at I'm going to get that I'm just using the definition. So minus come from I squared, I H squared. Then I'm going to get a double sum P Q of G M Q. And then I get here, I'm summing over K. Okay, coming from here. And I get the product of, so I have some Pn, so Q, P, Pk, and Pm. Is that correct? It should be N. Okay, so do you have everything? So I should have Gm, and then it's sum over P and Q, so it should be repeated. Q, P, and K, K. Okay. And so now we have to figure out what is this. This is just a matrix of, and in fact, we can show that it's a matrix representation of and what we can show also is that this is going to commute with any other Lie algebra element. Okay, so by definition, so this is zero. So this is a Casimir. And since it's a Casimir, if you remember the Schur theorem, but I'm going to finish here, then you know that this has to be equal to lambda identity, okay? And so what you get here in this specific case is that the lambda is related to the spin, the irreducible representation of your group here. And so let me just write the result, and then we will come back on that on Monday. So what we get is that L squared here has a discrete spectrum given by J plus 1. And in fact, because here we have put all the constants to zero, so if we add the unit here, in fact, here we have that it's going to be related to, if you add the unit, you get the Planck length squared here. And so this is, I think I'm going to conclude here because I'm already very late, so sorry about that.